Good evening, everybody. I'm Linda, the program assistant for Discovering Buddhism. We're going to get started in just a second, but I wanted to let you know that as of tonight, if you would like to stay after class for an informal discussion, feel free to stay. We're going to meet at the table right out here and, you know, just chat and talk about things. So that will be immediately following class. Let me know if you have any questions.
Okay. If I don't sit on it, yeah. Right. Okay, thank you. Is it on? Testing? Okay. Yeah. Squish it. Very comfortable. Thank you. Yeah. Okay. Great. Okay. Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Discovering Buddhism on Mind and Its Potential. This is our third of six classes tonight. Do you have anybody who's joining us for the first time tonight? A couple people. Okay. We're going to be doing some reviews, so I think you'll be able to jump in. And, okay, we're going to go through another one of the prayers tonight, not because you have to believe them or you have to recite them, but just so you're familiar with them. So get either a gold prayer book or a white prayer book. If you have a gold prayer book, turn to page 34. And on the white prayer, if you're using the white prayer book that's in the back of the chairs in front of you, it's on the first page in there. So last week I talked through Taking Refuge and Bodhicitta. So now we're going to go on to the Four Immeasurables. And this refers to four immeasurably great and expansive wishes or aspirations. I think you'll notice in all these prayers that we're not praying to someone out there to do something. So people often wonder in Buddhism, who are you saying prayers to? And that's a good question. Geshe Gelug gets asked that on a regular basis. And he always says that the prayers are aspirations. We say the prayers to put certain aspirations in our mind stream. And by saying the prayers, we prepare our mind for the meditation and teachings that are to follow. So we have four immeasurable wishes, immeasurable in that they're great, huge, that they include everyone, that no one is left out when we say these things. So the first one is, may all sentient beings, which means beings who have consciousness, have happiness, and the causes of happiness. And what that's a long word for, a long way of saying, what's that refer to in Buddhism? Does anybody know what that aspiration is?
Love.
Love, yeah. That's the Buddhist definition of love, that others be happy and have the causes of happiness, because nothing exists in the Buddhist worldview without a cause. So may others be happy, may they have the causes of happiness. The second immeasurable is, may all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. What's that?
Compassion.
That's compassion. Okay, so they distinguish love and compassion. Love is the wish that others be happy. Compassion is the wish that others be free of suffering. Really flip sides of the same coin, but a little bit different. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. So that's really just saying the same thing as the first two one more time. And then, may all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment for friends and hatred for enemies. So this is basically what it says. May all beings live in equanimity, which is a state not of indifference or being totally neutral, but not clinging, grasping onto certain people, and pushing other people away. And it's based on an understanding that all sentient beings, even the cockroaches, even the people we don't like, has an equal potential for enlightenment. They are equally worthy of becoming enlightened. Okay, so this is equanimity is a very important mental condition that we work to develop, and there are certain meditations that we do to develop that quality of equanimity, which doesn't mean that we start pushing away the people that we're close to, but it's just that we recognize how everyone is equally worthy of being happy and being free of suffering. So this is wishing everybody can have that mental quality. So four immeasurable wishes. So we're going to begin with some meditation. And I'll talk you through it. This will be a breathing meditation. So if you're here for the first time tonight, I've got a little bit of a sniffle tonight, so I hope that doesn't drive people crazy. Okay, so we'll begin by saying the Refuge and Bodhicitta prayer three times in English, and then we'll do the Four Immeasurable Prayer one time in English. Okay? I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By my practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By my practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By my practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment for friends and hatred for enemies. So, now we'll begin our meditation session, having said our prayers. And we begin by checking our posture. And I think most people are becoming familiar with it, but start by straightening your back, sitting a little bit straighter than you normally sit. Not rigid, but a little bit more erect. Head not tilted to one side or the other, but straight, maybe just a couple degrees in front of the vertical. Eyes either slightly opened, not so you're registering forms and colors, but so you just get a little bit of light coming in, or lightly closed, whichever one works for you is fine. Mouth is lightly closed, the jaw's not clenched. The tongue is up against the ridge of the gum above our upper teeth. Our shoulders are down and back a little bit, so our chest is a little bit open. Upper arms are away from the sides of our body. Our hands are slightly below the navel with the right on left, thumbs touching. If you're sitting in a chair, your feet are flat on the floor or on a cushion. And if you're sitting on the floor, sit a little bit to the front of the cushion so that your pelvis opens up. And your legs are in a position that you find comfortable and stable. The whole point of the posture is to stabilize it so it maintains itself during the meditation, so it's not a source of distraction. We can set it and it's self-maintaining. So start at the top, identify any sources of tension or discomfort, and address them now so they won't become a distraction throughout the meditation that's to follow. And we begin by taking three deep breaths from the abdomen, the stomach expanding on the in-breath and contracting towards the spine on the out-breath. Three slow deep breaths like that. And now we allow our breathing to return to its normal pattern. And as always, we begin by setting our motivation, which we really did by reciting those prayers together. But now let's just get very clear to it, clear to ourselves about it, that we're sitting here tonight doing this simple breathing meditation, not just because it helps calm our mind, though that's a good motivation, not just because it helps us be a little kinder to our family and coworkers and friends, but that's a great motivation, but because we're working on developing our qualities of wisdom and compassion so that ultimately each of us individually can be of benefit to all sentient beings. Seems almost ridiculously grandiose, but it's possible according to the Buddha. Just something as simple as sitting and developing a little ability to concentrate can ultimately benefit everyone. In fact, according to the Buddha, developing our mind, its potential for wisdom, to see reality as it is, and its potential for compassion, to wish those be free of suffering. Developing our mind completely in those qualities is the greatest thing we can do for others. Nothing else comes close. So now we've set our motivation, and we're going to do the actual meditation practice. And it's always, you know, when you sit down to meditate, it's good to have kind of thought out in advance what you're going to do. Don't just wander around and do a little bit of this, a little bit of that, but, you know, have a plan for the meditation that you're going to do. Doesn't mean it'll necessarily feel good or feel like a success, but it may help that a little bit. So this is just a very simple meditation, watching the breath. And this helps develop the power of concentration, which ultimately, if it's developed completely, becomes one of the perfections, one of the perfected qualities of a bodhisattva. We probably won't get there tonight. But we have to start where we are. So, physical sensation of the movement of the breath in and out through our nostrils. Nothing more than that. The concentration is on the movement of the breath. And, as will inevitably happen, the mind moves away from the breath to a feeling in the body or a memory of something that happened today or a sound down the street. We just gently set that aside, and it's as if we were leading a child who's wandered off back to the right path. We bring our concentration back to the breath over and over and over again. And that's the meditation. Mind awareness on the breath. And just as we began our meditation by setting our motivation, we end it with a dedication. We acknowledge that we've done something positive. Even if our mind seems like it's rambling and running around from one point to another, at least we were beginning to develop some concentration. And that has made a positive imprint on our mind as a positive action. And may that positive imprint not be lost, but may it ripen in the future in a way that is a benefit to all sentient beings. So just think like that for a moment. Any questions or comments about that meditation? That's a very simple concentration meditation where we place our mind on a designated chosen object and keep it there and keep coming back to it over and over. That's one type of meditation we do in Tibetan Buddhism. The other main type is known as analytic meditation, where we use the mind's ability to concentrate, but also its ability to think, remember, analyze. So we do both types of meditation. And the next module is how to meditate. So it's going to go into those subjects more deeply. But this class, we have to talk about meditation, and we'll be doing it. Actually, tonight's going to be pretty heavy on meditation and not much on didactic teaching. Any questions or comments? And wait for the mic if you want to say something. How many people do we have out there watching tonight? 9,000? 900? Nine. Okay. Any comments? Okay. Just review a little bit and get set up for the meditations we're going to follow. I think I'm losing my... Yeah. Wait a minute. Now I got a wire sticking in me. Let me just see if I can fit it in my back pocket. Okay, we'll see how that works. Yeah, I may have to move it around. I'll give you that. Okay. This class is called Mind and Its Potential. And as I said before, this is always the first class in the Discovering Buddhism series, because you've got to have this foundation. Even if you don't agree with everything or anything in that I'm teaching, this is the model that Buddhism is based on. And everything in Buddhism is based on working with our mind, so we have to understand how the Buddha described our mind. So, if we take our friend Gary here, sitting in the front row, what's Gary made up of? What would you say? In a very crude, coarse sort of way, using our gross mind, not our subtle mind. What's the simplest way we can describe Gary?
Mind and body.
Yes, thank you. Very good. Okay. There's a body. And there is a mind, okay?
And a lot of hair.
That qualifies as part of the body, okay? The body is the physical aspect of Gary, every bit of his physical aspect, okay? And where did that body come from?
Mom and Dad.
Yeah, it came from his parents, okay? The sperm and the egg, their genetic imprints, everything like that. The mind is the non-physical aspect, the mental aspect, the consciousness aspect, okay? These are both said to be, according to the Buddha, impermanent, okay? And what does impermanent mean in Buddhism? A very specific meaning. It means always changing. Okay, it doesn't mean they exist forever. It doesn't rule that out. But impermanent specifically means always changing. Okay? Gary's body is always changing. Would you disagree?
Oh, rapidly.
Sometimes rapidly, sometimes not so rapidly. In the same way, our mind is always changing. There is a continuum of thoughts, but those thoughts are always changing. So what's going on in the mind is always changing. So we have an impermanent body, and we have an impermanent mind, and they come together temporarily, and temporally also, but temporarily in this lifespan, that body and that mind are joined, and that makes what we call a Gary. Okay? So if the body is impermanent, the mind is impermanent, what's Gary? He's also always changing, okay? And he doesn't always exist. There wasn't a Gary 100 years ago. There won't be a Gary 100 years from now, because Gary is just the union of this body and mind. There's no Gary soul in there, according to the Buddha, that we can find. We have a mind and body that have come together that temporarily make up what we know as Gary. Can we find Gary in the body, just in the body? Would anybody say, take just the body and that's Gary? Can we find Gary just in the mind? If we get rid of all his physical aspects, would we call that Gary? No, we can't find Gary either here or there. There's only an impermanent Gary represented by these two coming together. And At the moment of death, the big change is the body goes off and decays, and then the mind continues on into the future, and there's no more Gary. Okay? The mind and the body separate, and that's the end of the temporary, always changing Gary that existed. It's not saying Gary didn't exist, but there was no inherent, permanently existing Gary that we could find in this union anywhere. All that there was a body and mind that came together temporarily. Nothing more, nothing less than that. Not saying that Gary didn't exist, but he existed impermanently. So thank you, Gary, for loaning yourself for that dissertation. Okay, so we're not going to talk about the body in this class. That's not the subject of that. Not body and its potential. We don't have a class on that. This one's on mind and its potential. Any questions or comments on that? I said, very important to understand that I'm not saying Gary doesn't exist. Okay, but I'm saying that he doesn't exist in the way that we tend to think. We think there's some sort of Gary out there that I can grab onto. But it's just a temporary union of a body and mind. That's all. And we put a label or we designate that as Gary, to use some of the jargony words that get used in Tibetan Buddhism, will come up in other classes. So Gary exists, but not quite the way we think. Body and mind, that's all. Okay? Wait for the mic.
Yes, but didn't Gary exist in another lifetime with another name, another body, or, I mean, where
that consciousness, that consciousness existed, but that we seem to agree that the consciousness alone is not Gary. Okay,
right.
What we call Gary did not exist before. Okay.
Okay.
It's consciousness. Okay, but Gary, with his personality and his likes and dislikes and his body and his long hair.
But he could have had another body, another, but then
well,
he
when you start saying
Gary,
he could have had it,
he would
you
have
know.
Been John or maybe Mary. Or
yeah, mm-hmm. You're saying that there's a Gary who had those things, that there's that
yeah.
Gary that the body and mind belong to. And the Buddha say, no, uh-uh.
We can't identify.
Yeah, there's no Gary that has that body and that mind. There's just
wow.
The body and mind coming together.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Anyone else? Okay. So, in this class, we're not talking about the body. We're talking about the mind, which is the non-physical aspect of our being. I use the word mind and consciousness pretty much interchangeably. Okay. It is absolutely not the brain. ATB, according to the Buddha. The brain is a part of the physical body. The mind is, or consciousness, is that non-physical aspect of ourself that unites temporarily with the body, and that in this life becomes Robbie or Sandy or Jason or whoever, okay? So, we talked about certain characteristics of the mind in the first class and last week. The first one is that it is completely non-physical. There is no physical aspect of the mind. Okay? It is related, it is interdependent with the mind and the neurotransmitters and the neurons and the synapses. But the mind itself, that phenomena of consciousness, of being aware of things, of perceiving things, that is completely non-physical. And according to Buddhist logic, a physical phenomena, such as our body, always has to come from a previous physical phenomena. Okay? By law of cause and effect. Similarly, a non-physical phenomena, like mind, always comes from a previous non-physical phenomena. Body comes from the egg and the sperm, the genetic imprints, our parents, okay? Mind always comes from a previous, to use the terminology, moment of mind. What I'm thinking now was preceded by another thought, by another thought, by another thought, by another thought. We can trace that back till we get to our childhood. But there is always a previous non-physical phenomena that causes the current non-physical phenomena. Okay, so there's absolutely no physical aspect to mind or consciousness. Okay? It's the first thing we talked about. What was the second point we made? We've already touched on this.
It's without beginning, without end.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. Beginning without end. It did not spring into existence out of nothing at some point in the past. It did not spring into existence based on some sort of chemical or physical reaction. It sprang into existence based on a previous moment of mind. Okay, there is always a previous moment of mind. Okay, in the same way, there will always be a future moment of mind. So there is no beginning where we can say our consciousness came into existence, and there is no point in the future when it will go out of existence. So this is what Venerable Rabina was talking about in the film we watched the first night. Our consciousness, our mind, the non-physical aspect of our being, does not come from our parents. Okay? It's already in existence. It is itself. It's coming from previous moments of consciousness. And that implies that each of our own consciousnesses is separate, okay? We're not having some sort of collective consciousness. My consciousness is separate from Gary's consciousness. Okay, everybody's consciousness is separate. They're not melding and trading bits and everything, okay? Your own stream of consciousness is your own. One analogy that they give frequently is a river, okay? The river is always flowing, okay? The water, it looks the same, but if we look at it at any moment, the water is changing, okay? So it's impermanent, but continuous. We can think of our mind as a river, a stream of thoughts or perceptions, again, without beginning, without end, always changing. Okay, any comments? Mike.
Thank you. I don't want to jump ahead, but then the Buddhas, once they're all purified and become Buddhas, right? They're all of one essence. What does that mean? They're all of one mind?
Again, when we get into these questions about what is the experience of a Buddha or something, that's a good question for a Geshe. Yeah, that's the top out. I mean, I think their minds are similar in that they've all developed compassion completely. They've all eliminated negative qualities, so they've developed wisdom. So you could say that they're, I mean, actually you can say our essence is of the same now, and if we say our essence is our emptiness, and again, this is jumping to classes, we're all similar in that way. We all have, but it's not like we're all one consciousness. Yeah, but I'm not really qualified to answer that.
That's interesting. Yeah. I keep trying to find books on consciousness.
Ms. Vatz.
Could you maybe give the analogy that if our minds are like a river, then since we've all been influenced by different bodies through beginningless lifetimes, mm-hmm. Then we all know what it feels like to have a bad back. We all have been somebody's mother at some point. Therefore, our minds have been imprinted through time mm-hmm. similarly.
We all have those experiences. We've all experienced everything in the past. We've all been Hitler. We've all been Mother Teresa. Not those actual people, but we've had lifetimes like that. We've had every illness possible. Mm-hmm. And we may not remember it with our gross mind, mm-hmm. but the imprints of that are on our consciousness. Yeah, so we've experienced everything everybody else has experienced, because there are countless previous lifetimes. They can't be counted. You've been born over and over. Your consciousness is united with bodies over and over and over again. So you have been, at some point in the past, your consciousness has been the mother to everyone here in the room. You've been child and mother, father and son. You've been in every relationship with every other sentient being. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, let's go back here, then we'll come back, okay?
But doesn't there have to be a beginning for some if the population continues to increase?
Well, no, because, again, according to the Buddha, okay, you don't have to accept this, there's humans, there's animals, so consciousnesses are moving in and out of those realms. And there are there are other realms that we're not aware of that our consciousness can go into. So no new consciousnesses are being created or going out of existence. Okay? Now there are more consciousnesses taking human rebirth because the human population is increasing, and there are fewer consciousnesses coming back as white rhinos or whatever because they're all gone just about. But the actual number of consciousnesses is unchanging. Do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's really heavy. I don't know if I want to.
Yeah, you don't have to think about it. Let's go over here. Yeah. That'll be talked on in some of the other modules. They'll talk about those realms. That's not really what we're talking about. Just stick with humans, yeah, for right now.
Okay, so maybe a more basic question. So we know now that, like, energy and matter can go back and forth and interchange.
Mm-hmm.
Photosynthesis happens and all that, which we didn't used to know.
Mm-hmm.
So energy is considered physical?
Yeah, energy is still a physical phenomenon.
Okay. Can you
yeah.
name something else that's non-physical besides mind? So I can kind of...
Oh, let's see. Ta-ta-ta. Well, yeah, karma, okay. Karma is like the ultimate rule of the universe, that all actions have consequences. Okay, it's kind of the Buddhist law of gravity to some degree. I don't know if you know, gravity has physical effects, but the karma, these mental imprints that are, again, is a mental phenomena. It's a non-physical phenomena. You can't find a piece of karma and hold it in your hand, okay? What else would be complete? I don't know if there's anything else that are non-physical. That's a good question. And then there's another trick question. There are a couple things that are permanent, okay, as opposed to being impermanent, which means unchanging. Does anybody know what a permanent phenomena is? An unchanging phenomena. What exists that is permanent, unchanging?
I'm going to guess Buddha nature. Your Buddha nature.
That's close, okay. Empty space is one, okay? The space in between, you get down to the smallest particle, whatever it is, the space in between those is permanent. It is not changing. That's one. Two is the what's called a cessation, when you completely eliminate, say, anger from your mind stream. By spiritual development, you get to the point where you've used up all the karma to be angry, or purified it, so that it's not possible to become angry. That's a permanent, unchanging condition, okay? The cessation of a negative mind state. Enlightenment is not permanent. The state of being enlightenment is always changing, okay? It's a series of thoughts, enlightened thoughts, but it's not permanent. And the third one is the emptiness, the lack of inherent existence of everything. That's said to be permanent. Anyway, that's not what this class is about, but that's a little bit of Buddhist trivia. Yeah. Let's go here.
So here's a brain buster. Where does physical matter come from? I mean, I understand, like, consciousness or mind, there's no beginning or end.
Yeah.
And it's just, this kind of constant recombination and decomposition.
Yeah. But I assume that the Buddhist point of view is that there is no beginning to the universe, there's no first moment of physical matter. They would say, in the same way, physical matter always has to come from previous physical matter. So they would say there is no first moment, yeah.
Big Bang.
I mean, His Holiness said, yeah, there's a Big Bang, but there have been lots of Big Bangs. There's just no first Big Bang, okay? There was always something physical before that. It can't come into existence out of a void any more than consciousness can. See, Anna, did you want to say something? Wait a minute.
I just want to say it very briefly that Lama Zopa Rinpoche told me when my mom was passing away. He pointed to me, he says, she's been your mother many times.
Mm-hmm.
He said, oh, wow.
Yeah, you had very strong karma with that consciousness. Okay. Any more comments before we move on? Okay, what's the third characteristic? Okay, let's go over here. Yeah.
No fixed qualities.
Yeah, no fixed qualities. This is wordy. Fixed qualities. Sometimes people will use the word empty. Sometimes people say it's like a void. Then to be a little more optimistic, sometimes people say it's pure. And other times they'll say it's in the nature of white light. You know, there are a lot of ways to talk about this. One way is a Buddhist saying, your mind is not the thoughts. Your mind is the empty space in which the thoughts occur. And it's just a sequence of one thought after another, after another, after another. But none of those thoughts, none of those qualities, none of that personality that we think we're stuck with, you know, that I'm depressed or I'm angry or I'm a doormat or I'm a this or a that. Those are just thoughts, impermanent thoughts that arise in the empty space of the mind. They are not the qualities of the mind itself. They are just thoughts. And a lot of those thoughts are habitual. And they seem like they're always there, and they've always been there, and they're always going to be there. And the Buddha's saying, no. You can develop better habits, habits that make you happier and that make other people happier. It may not be easy, but those thoughts that you don't like, that make you unhappy, that cause others to suffer, can be eliminated. Not just toned down, not just ignored, but completely eliminated. And you can fill the empty space of your mind with thoughts that make you happier, that work better for you. Okay, and that's all, according to Venerable Robin again, that's all Buddhism is getting rid of mental habits that don't work and replacing them with mental habits that do work. Because the mind itself is like empty space, and you can fill it up with whatever you want to. You can create the thoughts that you're going to put in there. It seems very hard initially, and we're operating under the influence of our past karmic tendencies, which really means our old habits. So, you know, it's like stopping smoking or something, you know, and breaking any ingrained habit is very, very hard, but it can be done. Okay, sometimes it's said the mind is like white light. Sometimes it says like a blue sky and the thoughts are just the clouds passing through. Okay. The mind is not the clouds. It's the space in which the clouds arise. And the clouds are not permanent. They aren't always there. They're just passing through. So that's really how we work with our mind in Buddhism, with an understanding that any thought that's there can be replaced with something better. Nothing is fixed. We're not stuck with what we think we have. Okay, so it's a very optimistic message, really. You know, we think start to think about, oh, Gary's just body and mind. There's no Gary there that I can grab hold onto. That gets a little bit scary. But it's the lack of any fixed inherent quality to our personality that allows spiritual progress to occur. And that's what all of Tibetan Buddhism is about, learning how to work with that aspect of our mind. And then these are the three qualities of it. And the fourth one is the function of the mind. What does the mind do? It perceives. It is aware of. It is aware of thoughts, or it is aware of objects. Everything that occurs in our mind, you know, it's like, you know, close your eyes, it's like a nonstop movie if you pay attention to it. Those are the things the mind is aware of right now. Sounds, feelings, memories, emotions, plans, dreams, all of those are phenomena that the mind is perceiving. In the same way as that cup and the cushion, the mind perceives it. It goes out to it and interacts with it in some way, and that's a very complicated subject in Tibetan Buddhism. How does the mind interact with what it perceives? But I think I mentioned this. You know, when we're talking about the mind in this model, we don't distinguish between thoughts and emotions, okay? They are all mental phenomena. Things, you know, I'm referring to them as thoughts, but they're moments of consciousness that occur in this empty space of the mind. Love, compassion, remembering I have to pick up some milk on the way home. You know, they're just mental experiences, one after another, this river without beginning, and they will continue in the future. Okay? Any questions or comments before we meditate again? Okay.
Robbie, I was reading that the mind is like a mirror. In other words, that it reflects or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
yeah.
If it's empty, how could it reflect, and what is it reflecting? And I'm
empty. Well, that's an analogy. It's not a literal description of the mind, but the point they're making is when my mind is aware of this cup, in some way the cup and my mind are one. They are identical. That is the content of my mind at that moment. In that blip where I perceive cup, there is no difference between the cup and my mind. It reflects the cup perfectly. And we'll talk about that later, but yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. But reflecting like a mirror is another way of saying of being aware of perceiving. It's the same idea. That's how the mind, what the mind does. Any other questions or comments? Okay, let's do another meditation. If you'd like to stand up and stretch before you do this for a second, that's fine. And then we'll go do a little bit longer one tonight. A little bit of analytic meditation. Yeah, you could add that to the list there. The mind is mirror-like. That would be, you know, we're talking about something non-physical, so we have to kind of talk around it quite a bit. But to say it's mirror-like is another thing we could add to that list. Okay. Okay, begin by checking your posture. I think everyone's pretty familiar with that by now. I'm going to do a little bit longer meditation, maybe in the 15 to 20 minute range. So if at some point you feel like you just have to move, go ahead and do that, but do it quietly so you don't disturb those people around you. And Let's begin with a form of what's called nine-round breathing. This is an elaboration of the three deep breaths from the abdomen. There are lots and lots of versions of this, and Geshe Gelug teaches it quite frequently on Sunday mornings. But again, it's a kind of deep, stabilizing breathing that you would use to prepare yourself for the meditation. You can't breathe this way throughout the entire meditation. So take your, in this version, we'll take our right index finger, close our left nostril, take three deep breaths from the abdomen, in and out through the right nostril. It's fine to make a little bit of breathing noise during this part of the meditation. Now use the right index finger to close the right nostril. Three deep breaths in and out through the left nostril. Now three deep breaths in and out through both nostrils. And now take a moment and set your motivation and really think about the bodhicitta motivation, the idea that just doing this meditation for the next few minutes is done with the sincere wish that it will be of benefit to all sentient beings. And that certainly doesn't come naturally to most of us. We have to kind of forcefully generate that motivation, but that's fine. Even gritting our teeth and kind of getting it out is said to be very powerful. And having set our motivation, we can now begin with a little bit of concentration meditation. Place the mind on the movement of the breath in and out through our nostrils. The physical sensation of air moving in and out. The mind is aware of that. And nothing else. if we want to use the analogy of the mirror, we can say that the mind perfectly reflects the phenomena of the moving air. It perceives it directly. There is no duality or separateness. And every time our mind wanders, we bring it back over and over and over again. And now that our mind is a little bit more concentrated, a little bit more focused, but still very alert, we're going to begin an analytic meditation. And if you're not familiar with this style of meditation, it may seem just like thinking, but it's done in this concentrated, alert state. In the same way, the object of analysis, we keep our concentration on that. And when we wander off that, we bring our mind back. And we use our mind's ability to reason, to remember, to experience, to explore the chosen topic. of meditation. So the next few minutes we're going to think about this third quality of the mind, its empty nature, its purity. What does that mean? And a good way to approach these kind of foreign-sounding concepts is through analogy. So we'll use our ability to imagine, which is what we do when we do visualization meditation. We'll get to that later. But we're going to imagine it's a beautiful summer day. We're lying in the grass, looking up at a perfectly empty blue sky. And we see clouds passing across the sky. We may even see a bird fly across or a butterfly. Those are just temporary phenomena existing in the sky, but they are not the sky. The sky is there, the clouds pass through. In the same way, thoughts pass through our mind, but are not the mind. They are just temporary experiences of the mind. So just think about that for a couple moments. See if that analogy helps. Now another analogy that may help. A perfectly blank movie screen. Perfectly white, nothing on it. And now there's a film being projected on it. And that always changing flicker of images being projected onto the screen. The images are our thoughts. The blank screen is our mind, on which the images temporarily exist. But the screen is not changing. It's still the same pure white screen. Just the play of images across the screen. And the really interesting thing is that the Buddha said, if you don't like the movie, you can change it. If you don't like the images that are occurring on your screen, you can take that film off that projector and put on something that you like better. Because the images are not inherent, are not fixed as part of the screen. The screen is a perfect white blank, and you have the freedom to play any movie on it you want. And one last analogy to think of. We have a pitcher of perfect, crystal clear spring water. And we drop a handful of sand into it and swirl it around. And it looks like the water and the sand are irretrievably mixed together. But if we're patient, we'll see that ultimately the sand separates from the water, and the water is as pure and clear as it was before we put the sand in. The sand is not the water. The sand is thoughts in the water temporarily, but not permanently part of the water. And the Buddha said, those parts of your personality, of your life that you don't like, that seem to oppress you, weigh you down, prevent you from doing what you want to do, those are not inherently part of your mind. They are just temporary phenomena. And for the last few minutes of the meditation, we're going to set aside the analogies. Hopefully they've given you a little bit of material to work with. And we're going to look at our own mind and just look at the nonstop succession of thoughts, one after another after another, not getting caught up in them, but just noting thought after thought after thought after thought after thought after thought, arising, existing, and going out of existence in the empty, pure space of my mind. Sound. Memory. Irritation, boredom, love, sound, one thought after another. So don't get fixed on any one thought, just look at the non-ending, never-ceasing succession of thoughts, one after another. And if you find it helpful, you can actually label each one thought. Let it go. Thought. Sound. That's a thought. Itch. That's a thought. Plan. That's a thought. So just look at the flow of thoughts in the empty space of your mind. The thoughts are continuous. They never stop. But they are not the mind. Not the good thoughts, not the bad thoughts. They are all impermanent phenomena. And we ultimately have the ability to cultivate the thoughts that make us happy and make others happy. And eliminate the thoughts that make us unhappy and make others unhappy. So take a moment and do a dedication. Acknowledge the positive imprint you put on your mind stream by sitting and thinking in this way. And may that not be lost but ripen in the future in a way that benefits all sentient beings. Any comments or questions on anything we touched on in that meditation? If you found one of the analogies particularly helpful or interesting, you could do an entire meditation on that one. You don't have to jump around the way I did, but I just wanted to bring up a couple images that I find helpful in thinking about this. See, in the back of the room.
So I have a question maybe you can answer quickly or not. if the mind is, I'm trying to even see the board, if it has no fixed qualities, if it's empty,
mm-hmm.
help me to understand how it is that karma goes from this existence to the next. You use the word imprint more than once.
Mm-hmm.
How do you imprint on a void? I don't mean that. If it sounds antagonistic,
no, that's a good question, and I cannot answer that question. I will be very honest with you. Again, I think it's probably the problem is that I've explained it in too physical a terms, trying to concretize it. So if we think of it something as a void, how can you imprint anything on it? I mean, that seems logical, and I cannot. But we're dealing with non-physical phenomena, so we're just kind of talking around them to a certain degree. I cannot answer that at all. Yeah, it's a good question. No, it's not antagonistic. Yeah, somehow the mind carries the most subtle consciousness carries these karmic imprints, or sometimes they're referred to as seeds, even though they're non-physical again. So it's using physical images to talk about something that's non-physical. Yeah.
So the subtle mind,
the subtle mind and the subtle breath, are we talking about the same thing?
Were you here last week?
I was.
Yeah, talking about the very subtle mind, actually, which is the one that carries the karmic imprint, the very subtle consciousness.
And is that not how, as the consciousness leaves the decaying body, is it not described as mounting on...
There are certain physical things that happen as we die also. Okay, the subtle breath is not the same thing as the subtle mind. But they occur, they're related, in the same way that the brain and our gross consciousness are very closely related.
Good.
Okay. Let's see, over here.
I just have a way of thinking about, like, your the karmic imprint that might help him.
Mm-hmm.
I think of it as like a ledger, like an accounting.
Yeah.
So it's not very... That's not physical in that sense, but it's more just, it's like what's in your wallet almost, as your consciousness is kind of going from one body or whatever to the other.
Anybody watch The Good Place, that TV show, and feel like you're watching Buddhism sometimes? Yeah, that's about your ledger being toted up at the time you die, whether you go to the good place or the bad place. It's an interesting TV show if people haven't watched it. Yeah, it's kind of philosophical, I don't watch a lot of TV, but someone told me about that. Any other comments? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. This is an easy question. If you missed the classes before, are they recorded, or can you...
Linda can answer that. That's a question for a course coordinator.
Yeah, they sure are. They're recorded, and you can access them from the website, kadampacenter.org, and up across the top there's a tab that says recordings. So you just go to that, and you can go back. Watch all, lots and lots of things.
One last question. And then.
You had mentioned, Robbie, that the mind perceives air. Could you just talk about that a little?
No, I was just talking about when we're doing the breathing meditation, the object of our concentration is the movement of air in and out of our nose.
Oh, okay.
That's
but the mind does not perceive air, right? Oh, okay.
Well, we're aware of it. That's what we're putting our awareness on.
Oh, aware of it.
Yeah, on a physical object, in the same way I perceive clock. We're just...
Like a reflection.
Yeah.
Just like a mirror.
Exactly.
That's
what you said. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The point is we're not sitting over here watching ourselves breathe, okay? We want our mind directly on the movement of air, okay? Not separated from it, but direct experience of it. So we're not even describing it to ourselves. There's not even that duality, just direct awareness of the movement of air in and out of our nostrils or our mouth or whatever, wherever air goes in and out on your body. Okay. Thank you, everyone. We have 3 more classes and a lot of material to cover, but I'm going to try and get in some meditation each night. Maybe not as much as tonight, but we'll do more. So thank you. Stay warm.